The Big Picture, brought to you by Bible Society Australia, shining the light of God's Word into every corner of your world. And Sydney's Hope 103.2, there's always hope. The Big Picture, a Christian insight on the world of film, television and popular culture, with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley.
Bonjour, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm Mark Hadley. Welcome to The Big Picture for Monday, April 27. And coming up on today's show,
we've got the British, we've got the Japanese, we've got the French. It's our foreign film and TV special.
And I finally get to rave till I'm delirious about the brilliance of Japanese animation icon Mr. Miyazaki.
And I'm going to share with you my top five foreign films that will instantly make you look smarter at any dinner party. True story.
Well, I'm lost for words.
It's only the start of the show.
I know.
We've got an hour to go.
Okay, here's some. What I'm about to describe is, sadly, a far too common experience for many Australian filmgoers. It's Saturday night, if you will, and we're looking forward to a big night out in front of the big screen, because that's all people do on a Saturday night, as far as I'm concerned. And with great friends and scalding hot popcorn, it's all set up. But someone in the group says, what's on? And so you have that massive sort of clicking of apps.
There's always one.
Tick, 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 yep. Tick. But oh no, they soon realise that they've fallen into one of those strange gaps in the film industry, in the film release schedules, where there's just basically nothing. The latest Nicholas Sparks travesty has finally slid off the screen.
Finally, we get to give it to Sparks.
And
yep.
Mad Max Fury Road is just a bit, well, too far down the road.
Man, but it's coming soon. It is coming
soon. Looking
forward to
this.
Please continue with your anecdote, Mark.
So we heave a collective sigh, and then someone uses the F word. Foreign. So what about this foreign film?
Why don't we watch this foreign film?
And visions of obscure long shots of dilapidated French beachfronts and perplexing plots spelt out with Japanese subtitles swim before our eyes.
Usually in black and white and running for, what, 3.5 hours, I believe.
And then somebody says, well, maybe we can get The Notebook on DVD after all.
And then someone does say the F word.
This week, we've set ourselves the challenge of putting the fun back into foreign. An impossible task?
No way, is what I say.
Well, as regular listeners will know, Ben likes black and white films so much he's redecorated his entire house to look like the set of Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal.
Ben, it's really sterile but kind of impressive.
Ben, and the picture of death sitting in the corner there is a conversation.
It's a real talking point, yeah.
Ben, do you think that we can turn the audience around, or should we just be happy with whatever the Hollywood machine turns out?
Mark, we can turn the people around to the cause of foreign. As you pointed out in that amazing summary of people's Saturday nights, we are in one of those times at cinemas on DVD and Blu-ray where there doesn't seem to be much around. I think it's because film companies at cinemas are frightened of the Avengers. That came out the other week.
That's well smashing everything
at cinemas. And so what do film companies do? They run for their heels, and so you don't get much on, which, as you said, can often lead people to think, maybe we should try something that isn't from a country that speaks English.
Yeah, and it's important for us to actually encourage our listeners, our viewers, if you're watching the video version, to stop playing the straight shot.
Broaden your horizons.
Try a little bit. Sure, you might end up in a sand trap.
But as I think we're going to discuss throughout this show, they're not all sand traps. And when you see the world, there are some amazing film and TV offerings from around the place.
Holes in one, just to complete the golfing analogy.
Thank you very much. Let's move on with the show. And by doing that, we thought we'd ease you in for a start. So in our first Now Showing segment this week, we're going to ease you in so easily.
Now, don't be scared of this foreign. We're going to go
so foreign that we're just going to jump to the land of tea and biscuits to talk about a program that aims to get the youngsters back into the books.
So what's in the book about?
Oh, right. You really want to see, do you?
Oh, I really want to see what the book is.
Okay, let's have a little look. We got the book.
I can see it.
Yeah, here it comes.
It's blue with a pirate on the front.
It's called The Night Pirates, and it's by Peter Harris with pictures by Deborah Allwright.
Deborah, they are more than all right. They are beautiful pictures.
Oh. Shall I put my glasses on?
Yeah, please do.
Always helps, doesn't it? Yeah, here we go. Down, down, down the dark, dark street they came, quiet as mice, stealthy as shadows.
You don't know how long I've been waiting to actually say this about a children's program. Encourage your children to watch Bookaboo.
Why? Well, like, what's the gain about watching a program that's encouraging the kids to watch books, Mark? Aren't we all on about movies and TV here?
Well, we should be, shouldn't we? But, you know, I'm going to take a little step to the right and say reading is really important, and this is one of the smartest television shows out there for kids. I mean, basically, if you don't understand, Bookaboo is a puppet, okay? And he's a rock god dog. Okay, who plays the drums? I know, just okay. I'm winging it. Just follow me on this one. So anyway, and he can't. His famous line is a story a day, or I just can't play. So he sits in his trailer, unable to go on to the concert to play his rocking out set until some celebrity from Britain turns up to read him a storybook. And really,
it's every dog's problem.
Every dog's problem. And it really is a contrivance, but it's cool because he sits there. It's a fun little sort of puppet character. These celebrities you've seen in lots of different programs and movies come in and they basically have a chance to show us a little bit of their acting chops as they read a story. But what's at the center of it all is a really good kid story and a relationship of reading to other people and people enjoying a story being read. Reading itself is like the huge winner of the program.
So is this a program that is actually trying to instill something in its viewers, particularly the youngest, but also in the parents, I take it?
Yeah, in an age where viewing is largely replaced reading, it means that basically learning becomes quite a difficult thing, you know, because there's so much of our intelligence, so much of our society, so much of our world that's just tied up in the ability to read. You know, and so if we don't engender...
Yeah, we can forget that in kind of this visual information age, the infographic age.
Just because we're carrying an iPhone around doesn't mean actually that, you know, that is in fact the sum total of wisdom.
Maybe. Or some other smartphone brand. We don't necessarily promote on this program.
We will get that sponsorship eventually, but what can you do? So what it simultaneously does, a program like Bookaboo, is it introduces them to the wonder of reading, but it does something else too. It actually introduces reading, if you like, into the household. Because it's not just the kids who are going, oh, wow, I see books are a fantastic thing. But they say to their parents, by reflection, read me a story. There's a relational thing going on underneath,
which might be
a brilliant
foreign concept in some households. Nice. Thank you.
Well, look, I think it's important. I think it's important to actually instill this in this whole idea of reading, not just because it is great for education, that it's great for society in general, to sort of for kids to be spending time with their parents and vice versa, and having that as part of the day, but because from a Christian perspective, God chose to reveal Himself through words. You see, like, yes, Jesus came down in the flesh, but he was the Word incarnate, and we are left now with a record, a written record, which we learn from. Now, a little family aside here, okay, my boys, I've got three boys. One of our boys has a particular learning disability and so some struggles with that. And we were thinking, you know, as he was growing up, would we like him to, this is weird choices you make as a parent, would we like him to walk more or talk more or be able to write? But in the end, we realized the thing we wanted the most for our son was to read. Because if you can read, you can encounter God. And you can encounter him in a one-to-one way, which through the Bible, which you basically can't do just by sitting on your own under a tree or something like that. Or even just listening to other people talk about God.
Yeah, yeah. So what did you guys do to encourage that kind of thing? Because you didn't have a program like Bookaboo. What did you do?
Well, look, the big thing, I feel like this is... this is like parenting 101, and I'm only sharing on the basis of what we have found makes a huge difference. You know how you build traditions into your family, and they become like the foundations, the linchpins on whole family histories and stuff. We sit down every night and read the Bible to the kids. We have a story time first, and then we read the Bible. And now we're at the point where in which the kids are starting to read some of the Bible too, and we ask questions about it, and it's like they're thrilled. They love it. If we miss it, it's a huge thing for them. Oh, we didn't have story time. We didn't have the Bible last night. Can we have the Bible tonight? And honestly, it's not like we're just those Christian parents, but it's a little thing you start when they're young, and you keep it going, and it builds into its own great, you know, view of life.
You worked on a sounds like a love of reading in your family before even a program like Bookaboo.
Yeah, actually.
So no wonder it's welcomed with open arms in your house.
Absolutely. And so what we want to say, you know, to almost any parent is that, you know, your reading ability you know, set aside. I know most people don't see themselves as great, you know, reading aloud type people. You know, they're not Shakespearean actors or something like that.
A rating from the other side of the bedroom.
The most sympathetic audience who will ever get will be a 3-year-old. You know, and they're happy to hear it and they're going to learn through it. But what's more, you're actually investing in something else, the love of the word. And that's a really good thing.
Yeah. So you're lovers of the word, and it sounds like Bookaboo is lovers of the written word. So would you encourage families, even those that aren't that necessarily into reading, to get into Bookaboo, because this might be a great way of opening the pages?
Yeah, absolutely. So Bookaboo is just, for a start, it's almost like a great way of learning about stories, because if you know one thing about kids is that they don't read a story once. You get a book out. If they see a book that they like and they read it ad nauseum, you've got to actually try and shift them onto another book. So it's a great way of discovering books, Bookaboo, for a start. But it's also just a great way of building expectation. This is what we do. We read stories. And so that'll affirm that all the way through. Hey, let me shift us on now to something, an edge out from foreign. Okay, you know, we've done the easy one, people. You're relaxed now. You're sitting back in your car or your favorite Jason recliner as you're listening to the show at the village. Hello, Mum. You know, so and now we're going to move you into something that's much, much more, you know, for people a little queasy. This one is a Japanese film, Kumiko the Treasure Hunter. And with Kumiko the Treasure Hunter, American brothers David and Nathan Zellner have written and directed a cross-continental oddity based on an urban legend. Possibly it's a true story about a young Japanese woman who bizarrely ends up in the snowy wilds of America.
I didn't mean to turn on the siren. I bumped it by accident. I got a call about a lady wandering around in a blanket. Are you that lady?
Well, that was about as
yeah.
I found that perplexing.
A cross-continental oddity.
But please tell me, what was it we just listened to and why should I watch it?
So, well, one of the reasons you'd be watching it is because, as we said at the top of the show, there's not much else around at cinemas. So Kumiko the Treasure Hunter has dared to enter cinemas at a time when the Avengers is smashing all up on the big screen. And Kumiko the Treasure Hunter, as that clip may have somehow demonstrated, is entirely different in a much different universe to Avengers and pretty much anything else on screens at the moment. It's an American and Japanese cross production, and it's about a woman from Tokyo, Kumiko, who believes she is, as the title suggests, a treasure hunter. And in the opening sequence of this film, we see her on a desolate beach. She's alone. She goes into a cave, digs up a copy of a VHS, an old school video, puts it in the player at home.
Oh, sorry, just for people. VHS.
Back in the olden days.
It was a cassette of plastic about the size of, well, a notepad, if that helps, that you used to put into a machine and pictures would appear on your screen.
And when Kumiko does this in the movie, what she discovers is she's got a copy of Fargo, that great Coen brothers movie, not the TV show that was recently out, but the
also
original.
Also great, but not that
also
one.
Also great, yeah. That's right, but the original film. And she gets particularly stuck on a moment in the movie where Steve Buscemi's character in Fargo buries a briefcase full of money in the snowy wilds of North Dakota, but most of the movie is set in Minnesota. What happens then in the rest of Kumiko the Treasure Hunter is she becomes so obsessed with this movie and finding this buried treasure that she goes across to America and attempts to uncover it, even though Fargo's a movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the real... I don't want to ask the end, but does she get... You know, is this a satisfying thing? Can you really sort of take... you know, fantasy and shift your worldview and feel happy about it in the end?
Well, I wasn't satisfied with the film. I really wanted to be. I thought that clip doesn't really quite do it justice. I thought the trailers were excellent for this film. It was so tantalizing. It is based on possibly a true story, but it sounds more like an urban legend of a woman who seemingly actually did this. But the movie was a bit indie by numbers, a bit American indie. So again, easing people into foreign concepts this week. This is largely an American film. Half of it takes place in America. There's not much dialogue. It's indie by numbers in as much as these are independent filmmakers who are making a beautiful movie, sparse dialogue, really kind of distant, detached characters that you're meant to invest all this meaning into. But one of the unsatisfying things about Kumiko the Treasure Hunter is its lead character is so insular and introverted, and you're not really sure why she's so obsessed with this treasure hunting escapade. It's very difficult to sympathize with her about her obsession that she's putting into And as you just mentioned, she's effectively changed her worldview, where she gets her purpose from, what she puts her stock in. She's changed that by watching the Coen Brothers movie Fargo. And so there's a great concept in this film about the impact that movies can have on your life and about the perils or the possible perils of if you watch the movie, whatever it might be. It could be anything from like The Matrix to the Transformers to some other foreign movie that we're about to talk about in the rest of the show. You could take ideas from a film and try to live your life by it.
Hang on a second. Let me just stop you there, because on the one hand, you've got this bizarre idea of this wacky, you know, Japanese tourist woman who's basically decided that she's going to believe a film enough to try and find a treasure. But is that really a parallel? Do we do anything like that? I mean, do you really change your worldview because of what you watch?
I'd like to say no, but I dare say that's not necessarily the case. Like, I've taken in so many movies and TV shows across my life that they've got to be, from the subtle to the strong, different things that I've taken up from movies that I've actually taken on board, whether I should have or I should not have. And we spoke the other week. Go back and listen to the podcast where you ranted on about Fast and Furious 7. About the impact that Fast and Furious 7 could have on young drivers, for example. And what we're on about in The Big Picture is often discussing the fact that, yes, movies have messages and ideas that they put across that, whether you like it or not, may be influencing the way you think. So yeah. Kimiko raises this issue, but unfortunately doesn't really go anywhere with it. And I found it largely unsatisfying. It's a beautiful picture to watch. It kind of looks and sounds great, but I found it sort of ultimately shallow. One of the other things I found ultimately shallow about it, though, is what Kimiko is investing her life in, which, you know, as a Christian, I'm sitting back watching this woman who's pouring her life into something that, even when people to her face tell her this isn't real, like this is not real, but she still is put so much into it that she can't let it go. As a Christian, I'm thinking, like, what am I putting my time into? What am I investing my life in? You mentioned before when we were talking about Bookaboo that God revealed himself in the Word, that Jesus came onto this planet as the Word incarnate, that there's been this revelation of God in human form. That's something that I can put my stock in, because at least it's real, it's been verified, all that kind of stuff. There's something here to invest into and give my life to and find purpose in, much more than, say, a movie about, I don't know, buried treasure that may or may not exist in the wilds of America.
And it's not as if we don't do the opposite, is it? Because you go out and you'll find people who will literally make their life all about vitamins or all about, germ-free, insecticide-free grains, or all about, you know, getting an exercise period of exactly 45 minutes per day. It's weird that we can actually build ourselves around things that really, if you look at them, are just not substantial enough.
Yeah, I think this can like bring us to a conclusion on Kimiko, the treasure hunter, talking about purpose. And one of the great things from the movie is walking away thinking about the purpose and what it is that you're actually devoting your time into. And you're right, you can put your time into anything. And Kimiko demonstrates that. You can put it into trying to find buried treasure that actually doesn't exist. You can do that. And one of the things that stands out to me about the words of Jesus and what Jesus went on about was that he pointed this out centuries ago, that we will choose all kinds of things in life to invest in. It's because we are searching, all of us, for purpose. And what he says as a reminder about that is that be careful what you do put your stock into, and think about what actually is going to last. So look into what's substantial. And for me, the words that he presented and how he lived by and how he backed that up support the fact I should listen to what he says I should invest in rather than anything else I can think of in my life.
Well, Kimiko the Treasure Hunter is out this week.
Yeah.
And if you just can't get their Bookaboos on the ABC, go watch that instead. Listen, we're moving on to something completely new. But before we do, we're going to play a sting. Now, the reason why I draw attention to that is because I was
thoroughly... That's seamless podcasting.
I was thoroughly briefed about the fact that sting was going to play, and yet all I did was confuse Fernando for about 2 seconds as he's going, am I going to push this button or not? This guy's just going to keep talking.
Anyway, it's a good punctuation from the start of the show into the middle section of our foreign fun, putting the fun back into foreign special.
People, we have moved on, and now you should know, because there was a sting. Okay, so we're actually moved on to our segment on press record. Sorry, no, not press record, on sound.
That's still coming up.
Okay, we'll probably have another sting. But anyway, you'll know when we move on. But right now, we haven't. And not moving on basically involves doing soundtrack. Soundtrack is that segment where we actually look at the music behind things. And since we're doing foreign film, Ben, I dared you last week when we were talking about this. come and give me not just a song that appears in a foreign film, but put it in a foreign language and make me like it anyway. You know, so what did you come up with?
Well, this is what we're about to do. Please press play, Fernando.
Comme dans un film de John Woo. Ratatata, tout bien fait du vaudou. Une balle dans le corps, un homme est bien mort. Les couleurs d'affiches fichent du fait qu'on le commémore. Pas de balle à blanc quand il tire sur un noir. Triste histoire, un gamin tombe sur le trottoir. Les langues se délient, on dit que c'est d'un délit. Ils s'en foutent comme d'une crotte de nez à New Delhi. J'ai vu la concubine de l'hémoglobine jetée dans l'abîme, un mec bien clean. Bing, quel est l'animal qui a appris dans le maquis à tirer des balles qui tuent comme les mecs en kaki. Si dans le ghetto chacun porte une arme, c'est que c'est plus facile à trouver que du shit à Amsterdam. Donc Kung Fu Fu, on passe au Kung Fu. On voit des mecs fous et tout le monde s'en fout. Et de la mort, il ne voit qu'un trou, comme dans un film de John Woo.
Well, Mark, impressed?
Oh, I would like to say that I was grooving out, but anybody who knows me basically knows I have no sense of rhythm.
Ooh la la, Mark, you knew that was French hip-hop from the great 90s movie La Haine?
Of course.
Yes, anyone recognises that amazing soundtrack. It was by a director called Matthew Kasovitz. This is an excellent... It actually was in black and white, even though it was made in the 90s. Great movie about urban warfare. It looks at gangsters and wannabe gangsters and their rivalry with the police. There's a lot of class and racial issues going on in this. The reason I chose it is because I thought it would ease people in. That's what the show's all about, easing people into foreign. The whole soundtrack is French hip-hop, and for anyone who's watched any American gangster film, particularly if it involves African-Americans, there's always hip-hop everywhere. Like, it seems like every African-American household in the States, whether you are involved in criminal activities or not, there's going to be hip-hop on.
They are a people of rhythm.
They are a people of rhythm and a people of the hippity and the hoppity. And what La Haine did very nicely was transpose that into a French setting, throw French artists at it. So the hip-hop soundtrack, I think, adds a layer of kind of internationalness to this movie while still concentrating this amazing potboiler of race and class warfare in Paris, isolating it in that location as well. So for me, the music from La Haine was as powerful as the movie itself. That's the first choice for soundtrack this week, Mark. Convinced?
I am. Quick, get me my French hip-hop.
Wow, that's the most, like, dad-like thing you could say right now.
Dang.
The second most.
Okay. Yeah. No doubt I will impress you with my second soundtrack choice later in the program.
And coming up on the show, we should say that we actually have some brilliant things to talk about. Hang in there.
As if we haven't already. But no, actually, the brilliant stuff coming up later. No, later on.
I must say, if you're looking forward to what's coming up on the show, we've got the box set to talk about, basically the Miyazaki box set, his collective works. It was fantastic stuff. We've also got some great things to talk about in terms of our top five foreign films will make you smart. But right now, Ben, where are we going?
Mate, we are now getting to the press record segment, which is that weekly segment where we hear from you guys, everyone out there who loves talking about movies and TV. Actually, speaking of which, you can find us on Facebook. You go and hunt down The Big Picture Show on Facebook. Get in touch with us. Let us know your movie and TV story. And heck, who knows? You may actually turn up in the press record segment on this program. We'd have to go out and record an interview with you and that sort of thing. But logistics can be worked out, Mark.
No, I actually want to say there is much more technologically minded people than us. If you want to send us an audio file...
The people can do this?
The people... are much smarter than I ever give them credit for. The people know how to press record on your phone. You know how to send an audio file. If you can, send it through to our email address, which is Ben.
tellthebigpicture@gmail.com. tellthebigpicture@gmail.com. Right, we're in the press record segment for this week. And because we're putting the fun into foreign and because we're easing all of us into accepting that, yes, there are foreign films from around the world.
And you can watch them.
And you can watch them and possibly even like them. Another way to ease people in is to, well, go and look at America. Because let's face it, we live in Australia. So therefore, pretty much every single movie and TV show, well, that isn't Australian, by definition is foreign. So we're going to America, but we thought we'd do something different. And we get so many American product here, particularly from the Hollywood system, but there are plenty of movies made in America that none of us really see. So what we would do for press record this week, we thought, is we'd get he's becoming quite a big picture regular at the moment, Russ Matthews. Russ joined us a few weeks ago on the show.
Our personal American.
He's our personal American. Any comment we need on America, we go to Russ. So Mark went to Russ this week to ask him about American movies that none of us have heard of.
Right. Well, we've chatted to you before, Russ, more on the basis of being part of City Bible Forum, but you're a film reviewer in your own right. Mm, so we're going, and in our week of putting the fun back in foreign, as we like to think.
There you go. Wow. There you go. Especially American films are
well,
so
this is the thing, because many American films we're all familiar with because basically they're 90% of the releases inside of Australia. Sure. So we want to know all about good American film that we just know nothing about, you know?
Sure.
Okay. But if you don't mind, I'm going to make it a little harder.
Oh, great. Okay.
So, okay. Because Fernando, our producer, has been on to us about how segments are running long, you have exactly 3 minutes and I'll be running a clock.
Oh, thanks, Fernando. Oh, I really appreciate that. Okay. All right. A little more pressure then. Yeah.
Exactly. So the best film you can offer that we've never heard of from America within 3 minutes and no pressure and come back.
I'm a little nervous now.
And your time starts now.
All right, this is for all the kind of Game of Thrones fans. Peter Dinklage, before he was Peter Dinklage on Game of Thrones.
He was taller?
He was taller, yeah, exactly. Actually, he's risen now. But no, actually, The Station Agent was a great film that actually kind of talked about him, kind of a whole thing about loneliness, change, friendship. It's just worthwhile just kind of going out. If you can find this film, it is worth the time.
Fantastic. 2 minutes, 40 seconds.
Sling Blade. Sling Blade by Billy Bob Thornton won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay on Forgiveness. Pretty rough film as far as violence and things, but definitely worthwhile. Avalon, which is a Barry Levinson film, which you maybe know Rain Man, but also another great film called Wag the Dog. The Barry Levinson classic about his life in Baltimore as a child. It's just a really worthwhile.
What was that one?
Avalon. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Which maybe you've heard of, maybe the soundtrack, but not many people really heard of the film. And it's a Coen Brothers film. Just a really worthwhile going and getting it for the music, but also just a good Coen Brothers film.
Brilliant. 2 minutes.
Stranger Than Fiction. It's hard for me to even say. Will Ferrell actually made my list. I can't believe this. But it is one of the best films. It's a brilliant film on sacrifice and free will. The Straight Story, which actually I think Ben mentioned would be a good Easter film, which I found interesting. But it is a great David Lynch film.
Sorry, we don't have time for snarkiness.
Exactly. Here's a plug for Wes Anderson. Many of the fans, Rushmore, which would be a great film at the beginning of his career, opposed to where he is now. And then a great Spike Lee film is actually right after Do the Right Thing, which is called Mo' Better Blues, which is a Denzel Washington film, which definitely worthwhile.
How many films have we got now? Done?
I think we're about 10.
Oh, you're doing really well, especially when you've only got 1 minute left.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Oh, I'm going to give you a trifecta here. Okay. This is the Sam Rockwell trifecta.
Okay.
Moon, The Way, Way Back, and Matchstick Men, which these are all films that most people, when they look at me, go, what? Those are definitely worthwhile, and also it's even a Ridley Scott entry. Now, I'm just going to give you some family films here in the last 45 seconds. we've got Fly Away Home, Jeff Daniels' film about a flock of geese, but it's actually quite good. The Iron Giant.
Actually, that one, he actually flies away with the geese, doesn't he? He's actually on an ultralight.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe I'm eating up your time like this.
Thanks so much.
30 seconds.
The Iron Giant, which is probably one of the few animated films that most people haven't seen, but it is a great film, and it's a Brad Bird film before he did The Incredibles, and I think it's definitely worthwhile. October Sky and Zathura, which are two good ones.
Zathura. It's like that's the Jumanji.
Yeah, it is, and it's actually a great film about a brotherly love.
Forget it. It's 18 seconds.
Exactly. All right, and then last one I'm going to finish with is the most recent film. It's called The Good Lie, which was just released last year, and it has one of the best Christian characters in cinema right now. His name is Jeremiah. Worthwhile. Go get it on DVD. And there we go.
In 3 minutes.
Woohoo! Love it.
Jeez Louise. Well, I think at my count, Russ got in 1.5 million movies in 3 minutes.
He did okay. And what people couldn't actually see.
He did okay. Come on, man. He had a stopwatch. And he listed off heaps of movies clearly. And people could actually write notes and go out and find those movies.
But what people couldn't see, because we were just doing the audio recording of that, was I was actually poking him with a sharpened stick every time he looked like he was actually getting into the flow.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic job.
So for anyone who wants to sharpen the press record segment, you will be poked with a sharp implement. That was press record for this week. Russ talking us through American movies that none of us have heard of. Now, moving on to the top five list for this week, and we're in the fun and foreign special. So we thought it'd be good.
That was me rubbing my hands, in case people were wondering what was going on with the microphone there.
Great podcasting. Yeah, great sounds. Oh, the sounds of hands rubbing. Mm. Delightful imagery. Let's move on to even more delightful imagery. The top five list this week, we thought we'd give you something that you could take away to impress your friends with. Now,
and that's why I mentioned foreign films.
We thought what we'd do is give you the top five list of foreign films that you should see, or at least if you haven't seen, know something about, so then you can instantly sound smarter at a dinner party. Because you often get to dinner parties and you're talking about movies and TV, and people have seen, I don't know, The Avengers, say, The Age of Ultron, something like that. But if you can list off any of these next five films that I'm about to tell you, you instantly will be the coolest, smartest, hippest person at that dinner party.
And possibly uninvited from future dinner parties. And yet,
more of what I said, Mark, less of...
Yeah, no, people always respect you one way or another. They go, that guy knows so much about film, I feel intimidated when I'm around him.
Yeah. So at number five?
Five.
1962's Italian film Eight and a Half by Federico. Mark, you don't do the scoffing.
I'm not.
Mate.
Go, please, sorry.
Mate,
just ignore me.
Jeepers. I can tell you need a bit of shot in the arm when it comes to smartness at dinner parties. I can hear that.
Please, Federico.
Federico Fellini's Eight and a Half from Italy. The next few films that I'm about to pick off are movies that have been revered for pretty much ever since they came out and grown in stature since that occasion. If you've never heard of Eight and a Half, it's a great, great film about movie making. It's a movie about a movie about a movie about a movie. And Federico Fellini is one of the best-known Italian directors. If you haven't heard his name before, go and look him up. He made a whole bunch of movies before Eight and a Half, including La Dolce Vita, which is really quite big around the world. But what was so great about Eight and a Half is Federico Fellini took his own artistic crisis. He couldn't work out what... He was looking to make his ninth film, couldn't work out what to do. So what he did was do this kind of explosion of personal crisis and internal introspection and dream sequences and fantasies all into one movie that somehow comments on the artistic process of making a movie, as well as everything from the Catholic Church to his relationships with women. And that's all up on screen in this amazing tapestry called Eight and a Half.
And I laughed only because I couldn't believe that when you were putting a list together, I didn't think of Fellini. Because the weird thing is that film has become kind of seminal for a bunch of films now that have been picked up in Hollywood about what it's like to try and make a film.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's a brilliant film. And if you want to see where it all began, that sort of storyline, great place to
yeah,
start.
And I think one of the resounding things about it is it's a little bit like an elegant fever dream, and yet Fellini doesn't really attempt to answer the questions that he's raising, which I really liked about the film. There's an ambiguity to it that you can walk away and mull over these deep things of life without necessarily having the answers. So that's number five. And here at number four...
Four.
Put it on the list just so I could wear this T-shirt that I'm wearing here in the studio today of a 1960s French film called Breathless. This is by a director called Jean-Luc Godard, and this was his debut film, Breathless. So a little bit like, and I'm not trying to get too grand on this, but a little bit like Orson Welles' debut with Citizen Kane, Breathless had an enormous impact on cinema around the world. And interestingly, Jean-Luc Godard did that by ripping off American cinema. So what he did was do this kind of collision on the streets of Paris of film noir, you know, those kind of gangster detective stories from the 30s, 40s, 50s in American cinema.
Indeed.
Throw that together with this style that became known as verite, which is the French word for, I think it's the French word for reality. He brought like a documentary sense to this quite ripped off story about a kind of low-level gangster and his girl trying to get away with a crime. One of the big things that this movie did was bring the old and the new together in this way where it almost suggested, like the title would suggest, Breathless, like they just don't care. Like they were just able to do this effortlessly. And what it led to, as you mentioned about Eight and a Half at the number five selection, how that went on to impact filmmakers, what Breathless did has impacted like so many people on the way. Probably the best example, I think, is Quentin Tarantino, who is a bloke who took all these elements from all different films throughout history and compiles them into something new. That's what Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless does. So that is at number four, Mark. But here at number three...
Three.
Is a little movie you might like to call Metropolis.
I will.
Which is, you often have made fun of me on this podcast. I'm just going to raise it now.
Not often.
Frequently.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Regularly.
Yeah, frequently mocked my proclivity, my fondness for foreign films. And often the example we tend to use is Metropolis. This black and white German film from 1927. Now, we shouldn't be mocking Metropolis.
We shouldn't, because it's brilliant.
I think pretty much every film that I've chosen for this top five list of the foreign films that will instantly make you smarter at a dinner party, this was a massive starting point for so many films that came afterwards. And Metropolis is really like the grandfather of so many science fiction films that have come ever since. And TV shows. I think like everything from The Jetsons to Blade Runner is influenced by Metropolis, which is this amazing... the set design and the costume design and the special effects for the late 20s is incredible in this film. But one of the things you can forget about this movie is that it's also this kind of hybrid of all kinds of different time periods and ages, but has quite a classic story at its heart, which is this rich dude who kind of throws off his aristocratic airs and gets in with the working class people who are being oppressed by the evil machine and the company that is keeping them down. And he gets involved with the revolution largely because of love, because there's this amazingly sweet woman who is the portrait of like working class purity, effectively. So at the heart of Metropolis is this great story about finding your own heart when it comes to the corporate machine versus those that are helping keeping the cogs turn. So that's at the beating heart of Metropolis. But what most people remember it for is its like searing impact across sci-fi films for the rest of time. So that's 1927's Metropolis from Germany, but here at number two.
Two.
Seven Samurai.
Oh, okay, now I win.
Thank you.
Okay,
finally, you're with me on this journey. I knew you would be.
No, I was coming in slowly, but I've got to say, go. Seven Samurai, tell us all.
Mate, you're a massive fan of Japanese cinema, and we're about to talk more about Japanese stuff when we get to the What Your Kids Are Watching segment. Seven Samurai, I mentioned before that Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless imported some American film techniques and pretty much like revolutionized them and turned them back to the world. Seven Samurai, this film from 1954 that Akira Kurosawa made, Japanese director, probably the most famous Japanese director. What he did is he took American Westerns and then put them in feudal Japan and made a samurai film like a Western. But then what that did was Western directors in America and around the world ripped off what he was doing.
It fed back into itself.
It's like it's this kind of constant loop. But the best thing about going back to Seven Samurai, or if you haven't ever seen it, is that it was ripped off as The Magnificent Seven. It was remade in the US by The Magnificent Seven. Forget that. Just go back to the original. It's a three-hour film, but carve out 3 hours of your life to watch this great film about this small village that is being harassed by bandits. And what they do is they get together their small pool of money and go out and hire Ronin, who are like mercenaries. They're like samurais without a master. And then the rest of the movie is this great like build up to the eventual battle that's going to happen with the bandits. But one of the things I really like about the film is it demonstrates the honor and the decency and the code that goes on with these samurai, that they're actually doing this for very little reward. Instead, they're really just in this for human decency.
Well, they're trying to find meaning again. That's the thing that these guys have
in
lost.
In themselves, but also to share that with other people and to actually do something for others. It's quite a resounding message that comes from Seven Samurai. And it's just an amazing thinking person's action film.
And if you ever saw The Magnificent Seven, that was basically a complete ripoff of The Seven Samurai.
Yes, yes, it was, Mark. So that was at number two. Akira Kurosawa's fantastic. I almost gave away what number one was.
Don't.
Seven Samurai.
Wait. Fellini, Goddard, Kurosawa. If you can mention any of those so far, you're just going to be cool.
Yeah,
you
know, that's right.
Straight. But this, I expect, is going to put us over the top.
Uh-huh. Number one is...
One.
The Seventh Seal by Ingmar Bergman. Swedish director Ingmar Bergman. Listen to you chortle, but mate, I just made you instantly smarter by saying that out loud in the same conversation with you.
Yeah, I know. Actually, I should have known on account of the fact that how you've decorated your house. It's amazing.
1957's The Seventh Seal. Again, like some of these other movies I mentioned in this list, you may not have seen the film, but you've probably seen people rip it off. And I think most famously, there's an image in this film, and it's actually the starting scene of this film, of a knight. This is in black and white. Of a knight in the 14th century Crusades who has a chess battle with death. Like death in person turns up on a lonely beach and challenges this night. Actually, the knight challenges him to a game of chess, but it was even ripped off by Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Like, that's
I know. I actually thought it's been in this scene has been in The Simpsons. It's been in heaps of different things. You know, it is actually one of those iconic scenes.
Yeah. So, but you should, like Seven Samurai at number two, go back and revisit the source. And yeah. I think the main reason, and it's really fitting for a program that wants to give a Christian perspective on movies and TV. This is a gimme, this movie, because the whole movie is about faith under fire. It's pretty much Ingmar Bergman's vitriolic attack on the silence of God. And the seventh seal itself is a reference to Revelation 8. There's a line in Revelation 8 that talks about a period of silence in heaven during the end times. And what seventh seal seems to be suggesting is God is silent, God is absent, maybe God doesn't even exist. And this knight character at the center of seventh seal seems to be representative of Ingmar Bergman's shaking his fist at God. Like, where are you, God? Why all this suffering? Why all this evil? Why? One of the things I really like about the seventh seal, some people I think will be off put by just how strong it is in its attack on God and its questioning of religious hypocrisy. One of the fantastic things about it, though, is a little bit like the book of Job. It actually suggests to you that you can rant and rave at God, and not just that God can take that, but, and this is what seventh seal doesn't give you, it still suggests that God is silent. I'd say go look in the pages of the Bible and go look at the way God works in our world and has manifested himself in the world to see that God isn't silent. So there is a response to give to seventh seal, and I don't think necessarily Ingmar Bergman like provides God a voice in the movie, but it's such a pertinent modern film, even though it was made more than 50 years ago, about people attacking Christian faith. So I think if you're strong enough in yourself to stand it, and you can stand 2 hours of Swedish black and white cinema, which you really should, number one choice is The Seventh Seal. Now, to round off the top five list every week, we tend to play an audio clip from one of the movies.
How easy was this going to be? When we set our producer the job, let's just go get us an audio clip of a foreign film that will play well on radio.
Yeah, difficult to find one for most of the movies that I've chosen on this list, but I was able to find one from Breathless.
The pretty girl. The bad boy. Le revolver. The nice guy, the naughty girl, the wise guy. Film noir, La Petite Américaine, The Thief, The Anky Panky, La Police.
Oui, oui, Frenchie.
I gotta say, that was a tough job, you know, to basically, because most people still are a little bit frantic about the idea that they might be sat down in front of a foreign film. Something with subtitles, I didn't bring my glasses.
Again, even if you don't watch those movies, which you really should, just mention them in conversation.
Or, and this is a good one,
instant
too,
respect.
Go to a video store, if such a thing still exists, I know there are a few of them out there, and ask for one of them and drive the 14-year-old behind the counter crazy, sitting around going, I don't know, I think I've got to ask the manager, have we got that? I'll just check it on the computer. How do you spell Bergman? Anyway, so look, I think that's a brilliant job. Go try. Just set it your goal for this year. Watch five foreign films, and you couldn't go wrong with starting with any one of those. But here we are, back at Soundtrack, our second part of A Bite at This Cherry. No sting for me to worry about this time. Just going to go straight into it. And I got to say, I was impressed with French hip hop.
Thank what you, you should be.
What are you going to do to us this time?
Well, let's listen and enjoy.
Look, where is my banjo when I need it?
Mate, every man should be walking the streets with a banjo.
Of course, that might be a little bit of a walking hazard, given the width of our
I thought to further ease us into putting the fun into foreign and getting people to consider movies from countries that don't speak English, I thought I'd invest in a song that speaks English, but it's from a non-English speaking film.
Now, I did think, okay, hang on. I did say during while we were playing the clip, which particular part of America do you consider foreign enough? Is it the Deep South? And you smirked because this is not an American film.
No, so the track is Will the Circle Be Unbroken? And it's performed by the Broken Circle Breakdown Bluegrass Band, which is from the Belgian film, The Broken Circle Breakdown.
I'm speechless. I'm literally speechless.
Yeah, you should be. And I think you will be if you actually see the film. It's a really breathtaking portrait of... Amazingly, there's a bluegrass band in Belgium, and they play... That song was most famously recorded by Johnny Cash. Mm. But they play all these kind of gospel standards in Belgium in a bluegrass band. But the main thing about the film is this incredible portrait of what happens to a relationship when a tragedy strikes it. And why it shows that movie is there's a constant tension in this film. And I can't recommend The Broken Circle Breakdown enough to people. It's got some strong elements in it that you might be confronted by, some sex and some swearing. But why I highly recommend it, this constant tension going on in the film of particularly the husband in the film trying to deal with grief. And similar to The Seventh Seal that we just talked about, there's a real rage at God, even though this husband doesn't believe in God. The tension, though, and the juxtaposition in the film is that he's in a band where they're constantly singing these gospel songs that, as that song, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, captures something of the comfort and the eternal security and peace that awaits that God's provided in heaven. So for a film that has the two tensions going on of is there a God or is there not a God represented musically, that's what The Broken Circle Breakdown does. And that's the second soundtrack choice for this week, Mark. And yes, you're right to be impressed.
Well, listen, we're going to move on to something now in terms of the category of foreign, which is actually incredibly easy to access. Now, I know that some people would think I have to wander off to the foreign film section in order to find some of the things we've been talking about tonight.
Do these even exist anymore?
They do. Don't mock just because we're all sort of like skimming through our Netflix.
Don't mock. I'm the guy in a T-shirt from a French 1960s film.
You might think to yourself, can I actually see some of this stuff? And some of the stuff we're going to talk about now is just incredibly seeable, very easy to access, and that is the films by Hayao Miyazaki. This week is the release of Miyazaki's box set, which is basically his collected works. He is a world-renowned writer, director, and French animator. Oh, sorry, French. What am I saying? Japanese animator.
And because the name sounds so French.
It's the French T-shirt Miyazaki. That's staring me in the face here. But anyway, Miyazaki is basically, his box set is out through Madman this week. It is an incredible selection of material. Let's listen to just a little bit of it.
Porco Rosso, Miyazaki's soaring action adventure of a valiant pilot.
Porco Rosso!
Here we go.
It is Porco!
Transformed by a mysterious spell.
I only look out for myself.
And his heroic battles to rid the skies of notorious pirates.
Slice them into bacon!
Full of courage and humor.
I'll tell everyone you're a chicken!
Chicken, pig, what's the difference?
Take flight with the incredible Porco Rosso.
As we continue to ease people into foreign films, Mark, it's great to hear the American trailer guy is also doing the voiceovers for Studio Ghibli, that great Japanese animation studio, doing the voiceovers for their trailers as well. Now, you mentioned that you're talking about a box set of Miyazaki's work, who heads up Studio Ghibli in Japan. Why should parents be rushing out to buy this?
Now, I've got to say that this sits in our What Your Kids Are Watching this week, and we've twisted it unmercifully into what your kids should be watching. Now, I know as a parent, you might be sitting there going, why would I be exposing my children to Japanese animation? I don't know where to even begin with that sort of question. But
you really need to find a place to begin.
You've got to begin, and this is what you've got to say. Firstly, you are going to see some stuff in these sort of films that is basically just outside of the whole Hollywood studio machine. You know, animation is a particular style that has been almost overtaken by what's happening in the Americas. And so if you can push outside to something like Studio Ghibli, which is arguably the most revered animation studio in the world outside of America, you are going to actually see techniques and styles and storytelling that you will see nowhere else. I mean, we've been overtaken by computer animation. But Studio Ghibli, I was there actually last year when I was in Japan doing some work there, and they are incredible in the way that they still hand animate everything. when they do a background.
Old school, really? I know,
but they do this like...
By hand?
Like a massive...
Actual hands?
Imagine a massive, almost wall-sized artwork rolling along on a machine so that they can place their, you know, foreground animation in front of it.
I want to go to that place.
You've got to go see the entire... Look, if you go to Japan, go to Studio Ghibli. It's like... The studio itself is like a theme park. You know, all the house is misshapen, like a Willy Wonka adventure. You know, it's incredible to go visit. It's well worth doing. You're going to recognize some things in this box set. You know, many people have heard of The Wind Rises or Howl's Moving Castle or Spirit Away. They're all there. But Porco Rosso, which we just played a section of, I was thinking, how well will my children adapt to this? So what I did is I got the box set, courtesy of the great guys at Mad Men, and I sat them down and said, boys, here are 11 Japanese films. You can pick any one of them.
And you're not leaving this room until you watch them all.
We spent a week in that room. And I've got to say, the boys were thrilled because they started to see stories that were like just incredibly different. You know, the result is absolutely beautiful. You could freeze any frame and see something amazing. You'll see characters that just don't make it into the American story style.
So that's what you're... Is that the particular difference? Is it the content that's so different? You mentioned the animation is distinct, but is it the content itself that's so different from what we get, particularly out of the Hollywood system?
Yeah, Miyazaki is concerned with questions that we are just not concerned with in the West, or at least the films say we're not concerned with. You know, Miyazaki is really trying to ask things like, where is our world leading us? You know, he's trying to recognize in all of his storylines that life is pain. Do you know that, like, you have your typical sort of Disney film, you know, and basically kids might suffer a little or characters might suffer a little, but ultimately there's this resolution. You know, in the Japanese view of the world, there's not always an easy resolution of pain, and part of the struggle is to learn to live with pain and to live with disappointment and to rise above it in your character, not to have it neatly wrapped up in a bow.
Are these just downers? No,
that's the thing, because the heroes become heroic in a way that we could actually emulate. You know, I can't always just have that last minute save in my personal storyline where which someone bursts through the door and says, no, everybody's still alive, or yes, you've won the competition, or you are the best, or whatever. That can't always happen, but Miyazaki takes us into a world where the hero actually becomes great through realizing that sometimes he might lose stuff for the sake of others, for the community, or for his family. It's not so individualistic. It's actually great, and it's better viewing for kids because of that.
Now, it sounds like you're highly recommending this to people out there, but I've seen some of Miyazaki's work, but not all of them, but there's some that I've seen, like Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle. I don't quite understand them, but it seems like they've got a backdrop of quite like Chinese spiritualism, or what's that, the Japanese Shintoism? Is that the word?
Yeah, for that's right.
Spiritual belief?
I think ancestor worship.
I think they're permeating through these movies, so shouldn't we be exercising it, like raising a note of caution? Like, should people be backing away from that content, or are you... Like, are you advising them to embrace that?
I think it's six of one and half a dozen of the other. Because what I want to say is that you should actually embrace some of these films because they have spiritual content. I mean, think about that for a moment. Most animations that we put our children in front of don't actually assume a spiritual side at all. They don't assume that there's a soul. They don't assume that there's an afterlife. They don't assume there's anything but the here and now. And you've got to work it all out. And if the hero can do it in the here and now, then everything's fine. Okay, but Miyazaki can't conceive of a universe that doesn't have a spiritual component. So even when he does, say, a post-World War II story like The Wind Rises, he's still thinking about what it means spiritually to live in a world like that. And so when you have his films, you're forced to think about what are the implications for not just me, but for what's inside of me, for the bit of me that goes on. Okay, now, yes. He's drawing, weirdly, he's not just drawing on Japanese mysticism. You actually mentioned Howl's Moving Castle. That's actually a remake of a European book. You know, so there is a certain degree of mysticism going on, and I only want to put that down to the fact that Miyazaki's not a Christian. If he was a Christian, he'd know better. You know, I believe like Christianity is actually like flicking to the back of the book and finding all the answers, so to speak. It's actually the complete revelation of what's going on in our spiritual world. But the questions are still valid. And so getting kids to think about a world that is there, so long as you're with them there to contextualize it and say, okay, hey, you know, do we really believe in spirits and plants and things like that? Or do we believe that the spirit behind everything gives them meaning? You know, then that's something that's still worth doing.
Wow. So for our What the Kids Are Watching segment this week, or What Your Kids Should Be Watching this week, it sounds like they should be, definitely.
I've got to say, I've got to put in a little note of caution. Maybe watch these films individually. Mad Men has got the box set out, 11 fantastic films for $325. But if you just choked, these things are absolutely easy to get online, easy to watch individually, and I just would start with something like Howl's Moving Castle. Easy way in. Well, that's what our kids should be watching this week. Now, what will you actually be watching? Okay, what's coming out in films, Ben?
Well, to finish up on this big picture special of putting the fun back into foreign, I couldn't do it.
Because the mainstream releases.
Trying to look around cinemas to see what was going on. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, when we were talking about Kimiko, the treasure hunter, there isn't really much around. The only other really prominent release out this week, if you can call it that, is an American movie called Unfriended, which. It looks like it's a teen horror movie. Looks like it's kind of conceived over Skype. So it's some story about kids that are in some Skype chat room, and then some weird ghostly presence starts freaking them out while they're in there, and it's got something to do with a young woman's death about a year ago. Now, judging by reviews of the film, it sounds like the movie could go one of two ways. It sounds like it might sadly go the way of it just sounds a bit like an interesting gimmick idea for a horror movie. I was really hoping it might go the other way, which some reviewers seem to suggest that it slightly does, which is commenting on our world today and the fact that so many of us, young people included, don't think through the decisions they're making in the digital space. So this movie highlights what can happen when you put up a video or post comments or whatever it might be, and how they can haunt you into the future. I was really hoping Unfriended might be a bit more serious than what it actually is, but it probably isn't. So that's about it that's going on around cinemas at the moment. As a quick overview of what's out at the moment on DVD and Blu-ray, I was able to find some international choices.
Oh, okay, tell me, please.
So here we go. The first one's called Escobar Paradise Lost, which stars Benicio del Toro as that Colombian drug runner Pablo Escobar. So Benicio del Toro played Che Guevara a couple of years ago. Now he's playing Pablo Escobar. And this is strangely got the Hunger Games star Josh Hutcherson in this. And it's weirdly, it's a story told through his eyes. So he's a tourist in Colombia who falls for Escobar's niece.
I know. I was reading about this and thinking to myself, I put it on my to watch list because that idea of just seeing behind the family, behind the facade of drug dealer, what does family look like?
Yeah, but it sounds like just so nutty it might not work. That's what I think. Yeah. And then quickly moving through another couple of choices, there's a Swedish film called Force Majeure, which sounds really great. It's this black comedy. It won a lot of awards at Cannes last year about a Swedish family that are at a ski resort. An avalanche comes, as tends to happen at ski resorts, apparently, for
less
Swedish families.
Less so at beachside resorts, but yeah.
And then what comes after that is the impact on this relationship apparently is darkly humorous as it investigates the fallout that happens to this marriage. So that's Force Majeure. And finally, Penguins of Madagascar.
Yes, that's about as foreign as we want to go.
Penguins of Madagascar. and by way of promoting other stuff that's around, not just on film and TV, if you go to Insight's website, Insight's is a big supporter of what we do here at Big Picture, you can check out Russ Matthews, who is our American for hire on this program that we heard earlier in the show. Russ reviewed Penguins of Madagascar, and all he could really say was, it's okay, but it feels like a carbon copy of a carbon copy of a carbon copy of a carbon copy of every other animated movie ever.
Yeah.
That's Penguins of Madagascar. That's on DVD and Blu-ray this week.
But Benedict Cumberbatch is in it. That's all I can say.
But what isn't Benedict Cumberbatch in?
In the great empire of Benedict Cumberbatch films. Okay, well, on TV, look, there's not much foreign particularly, but actually there is one thing. If you do like My Kitchen Rules, no, I'm not going to sort of try and make a segue about foreign food, but Colin Fassinage is the Irish chef who's often on that, and he actually does a special about Ireland as he understands it, and that's really kind of good. It's a several part series that starts Wednesday this week on Channel 7, so that's worth having a look at. I'm not, but if you're a fan of Dr. Blake Mysteries, and given the fact that they have such high ratings in Australia, you might be more people than me. Series 3 is kicking off. Series 3 is actually available on Blu-ray, I should say.
Yeah.
So that's coming out this week as well.
That's the most foreign choice you can think of, a homegrown product.
Here's something that you really should have a look at too, though. Now, I don't want to use the word foreign lightly here, but it's a completely different world. 8MMM Aboriginal Radio is kicking off on the ABC. This is a new television series set in Alice Springs about an Aboriginal radio station and about largely the whiteys who are working for the station and trying to understand the culture they're supposed to be serving. It's a bit comic drama.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I know. It's actually, look,
the great
first
idea.
The first episode is a little stereotype for the whitey, so to speak, for me. And so, you know, you do get some characters who are in there almost cut out to represent certain sort of, you know, markets of misunderstanding when it comes to sort of Aboriginal culture. But look, this looks like a great piece of TV, so get along to the ABC this week. Actually, no, just turn on your TV because I think they ship it out that way, so you don't even have to go to the station. And watch 8MMM Aboriginal Radio starts Wednesday this week. Now we're going to have a look at the print side of things. Surely there's some rescue somewhere in print. What's happening in print this week?
So is anything happening in print? Mark, I don't read much foreign press, do you?
No, not really. So how about we stick with what we know?
But closer to home, Insights magazine is out. It's continuing. You can continue to read about this. We're only a couple of weeks away from Easter, but the edition of Insights is so good that you should continue to read about how we can live a resurrected life. That's how good the latest edition of Insights is.
Yeah, and there's another one actually in on a similar note in the April edition of Eternity, which it should still be hanging around somewhere around the church. Have a look at the Has Science Made Religion Redundant article. Professor Peter Harrison is actually talking. He basically gave a series of lectures on this. And his argument that science has not and never can really eclipse religion is there in detail. I think it's worth a read. So there's something that, you know, you can fill in while you're waiting for someone to deliver that foreign film.
But Mark, I think we achieved our goal today.
What will we be trying to achieve next week, Ben?
Well, I was just going to reflect a little bit slightly on, I think we did inject some fun into foreign.
I personally feel much more fun as an individual now having talked about foreign
stuff.
No,
like patting ourselves on the back. But coming up next week, we're going to keep going with themes, but more of like a half theme. It's going to be a full-blooded theme. We're going to do teen movies. We are going to focus on teen movies. We're going to focus on the sounds, the delights, the not-so-delights. We're going to talk about teen movies. That's coming up next week on The Big Picture.
I've been Mark Hadley.
And I'm still Ben McKechnie. Thanks for joining us.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production and part of Hope 103.2's family of podcasts and vodcasts.